Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. We're your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. As many of you know, and for those of you who do not know, Eric recently had his second book published, The Prop Effects Guidebook.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you.
So I thought we'd take an episode and talk a little bit about this book, where you got the idea, and what people can expect to see when they get the book.
Awesome. Yeah.
So let's start off with what inspired you to get this book going.
So I had my first book, The Prop Building Guidebook for Theater, Film, and Television. And that one, I specifically kind of tailored it to building props, static props, you know, basic mm-hmm. props fabrication. And I didn't put any of the tricks in it, you know, like making props light up or that sort of thing. Because mm-hmm. that's kind of like this whole other topic that would have made it just too big of a book. So then, you know, when my publisher was asking what ideas I had for a second book, that's when I thought, oh, this is where I could have you know, props that light up, props that make sound, mm-hmm. breakaways, props that bleed, props that, you know, make smoke, fake fire, all that. Basically all the tricks and things like that. You know, the idea, how they work together is that the prop building guidebook would tell you how to, like, measure and cut wood and mold and cast. And then the prop effects guidebook would be like, this is how you put lights in and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you could have these two separate books and they don't have to repeat information. You know, you don't have to talk about, like, choosing what kind of plastic is right in the prop effects yeah. guidebook. It could just mm-hmm. be focused on all the tricks and things like that. But, you know, special effects is a big part of props. You know, you could have a whole career where you don't build any props or things like that, but you're always going to have to, like, wire a fake candle into a lantern or mm-hmm. make a blood pack for somebody or, you know, hide a speaker in something, a breakaway yeah. bottle, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's hard to think of a play that doesn't have some kind of trick in it, and you're going to have to figure yeah. out how to solve it.
Yeah, there's always something.
Yeah.
Now, in this book, you talk specifically about lighting effects, some trick mechanisms, pneumatics, breakaways, smoke and fire, sound, and electricity. What made you choose to focus on these specific topics? And were there other topics that you were kind of toying with discussing that didn't make it into the book, or were these kind of the main ones?
Sure. Yeah. I kind of started off with, like, what are the tricks that show up in the most plays? And I did a lot of, I asked a lot of props people, you know, so it wasn't just based on my own experience, but even based on my own experience, it's like, obviously you're always going to have to stick a light in a prop, you know, you're always going to, that's like your basic number one thing. So you would have to know about electricity and batteries and wiring and lighting and all that sort of things. And so going from there, I was thinking about, like, what are the other, like, really basic tricks? What are the things that have to be in here? And so breakaways mm-hmm. are a big one, you know, knowing how to make something break away and be reassembled, or something that's like a consumable that breaks away. And mm-hmm. sound, you know, to some extent, you always have to hide a speaker in things and that sort of thing. You know, smoke and fire effects, you're gonna have to have smoke and fire, that sort of thing. So it was really based off of what is the most common prop tricks found in plays, like looking at the plays that are done the most often, that sort of thing. And what mm-hmm. are the things that are kind of the most accessible? So I got into pneumatics a bit because there are props people working with pneumatics, and also there are props people who want to learn pneumatics, but there aren't really enough yeah. resources out there. So I figured if I wrote a chapter on pneumatics, that would be creating this resource for them. So when I was yeah. researching it, you know, I'm pulling information from a lot of different sources, and none of it was really theater based. So you can go mm-hmm. from, like, you know, tiny, tiny pneumatic devices all the way up to massive industrial pneumatic devices. But, like, in theater, we only have to deal with, like, this small little range. So you don't have to know how yeah. to, like, power the pneumatics for an entire factory. You just need to, like, have something that hides in a prop. So you're only dealing with this, like, very specific set of things. So distilling mm-hmm. all that information down into one chapter was really tricky. But, yeah, from there, it was just like, what did I have room for? So I started getting into some of the microcontrollers and things like that, because people are really interested in Arduino and that sort of thing. Yeah. And I did a little bit talking about like how to program them and just introducing the concept of programming. But I just, I didn't have the room to do a full, like, this is a programming guide to Arduino. Like, my book is not going to be where you go to learn how to do everything in Arduino. It kind of introduces you to the concept and gives you some terms and concepts to search more online and that sort of thing. Part of that was, again, like, that could be a book by itself. But another part of that was talking with props people. There's not a lot of people who are really using Arduino that much or microcontrollers. You get a bit of people, but they're kind of the people who like are able to learn that stuff on their own anyway. And most of the time it's like, it's too complex and it doesn't actually solve the needs of the theater. You need something that's like controlled by the light board or controlled by the actor. You don't need something that's like off doing its own thing for, you know, half an hour.
Yeah, I've dealt with Arduinos very, very little, and I'm very intrigued by them and would love to learn more, but honestly, I've never needed them, you know?
Yeah.
There's never a quick fix. It's like you just said, something you really need to spend the time educating yourself on and could be helpful in scenarios in the future, but for me, it wasn't a necessity.
Right, yeah.
But very fascinating, though.
Yeah, so just stuff like that. I didn't deal with actual pyrotechnics, just because basically anywhere where you need to do pyrotechnics, you're going to need a pyrotechnic license. And in order to get a pyrotechnic license, you have to have like 2 years of actual pyrotechnic experience. So it's like, what will you have in a book? Like, I don't want to tell people who don't have a license how to use pyrotechnics, and people who have a license are going to know all the stuff I'm going to tell them. So, you know, I did put in, I tried to define some of the terms, because something that always frustrated me was anytime anybody starts asking on a forum about pyrotechnics, people are just like, you need a license. You know, don't even ask about this. You need a license. And it's like, how do I know what not to ask about? Like, what even is pyrotechnics? Like, what counts as pyrotechnics and what isn't pyrotechnics? So I at least tried to define the terms and lay out the fact that, like, these specific effects you need a license for. These types of effects you probably don't need a license for, or you don't need a pyrotechnics license for, just to kind of like introduce that concept. Because there's some people out there working in high school theater, they might not know that a pyrotechnics license is even a thing, and they could go out to the fireworks store and buy stuff. And why can't you use this on stage? Nobody's checking it on me. And so, yeah, a lot of safety information in the book.
Yeah, which I think is very, very great. And it is very spelled out very nicely, and it is easy to read. There are pictures throughout the book, which is great, so you can kind of put two and two together, because I'm very much a visual learner. And as you said, you do describe the terminology very well throughout the book, which is great.
Yeah, you know, there's a large portion of this book is kind of just stuff that I wanted to keep track of, like things I take notes of and things that I want to remember. So, like, you know, how to wire a battery to a switch to a light. I put in a diagram of that, because I'm always like Googling that diagram, and I just wanted something at my fingertips at all time. Or like the, you know, the parts of an LED and how to wire an LED and how to do all the LED math, you know, trying to make like a little diagram or illustration that I could refer to. So that's, you know, a lot of the book was just kind of making a guidebook for myself to be able to keep track of all this information without having to keep it all in my head. Because again, like a lot of these tricks, you don't use them all the time. You use them like maybe once a year or maybe once every couple of years. So you're not going to remember how you did it 5 years ago.
Exactly. Now, when you decided to create this book, how did you go about for research? Did you pull a lot of this information from past experiences? Did you interview and just do a lot of research on specific topics that you wanted to learn personally?
Sure. I had some personal experience with these things. And so I was able to kind of, I was able to look up like the actual technical information, you know, things that I didn't know, but that I knew I would need to know. I also, you know, I collected a lot of books on the various subjects. So there were some books that I would like leaf through and pull out what they had to say about things. Cause some of the stuff is fairly old school things on like breakaways and trick mechanisms and mechanical effects and things like that. You know, books from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, had useful information on a lot of those kind of old school theatrical prop tricks. There's some stuff in there about like manual sound effects, which goes back to, you know, the 19th century and things like that. Certainly like blood effects are like some of those are centuries old kind of tricks and techniques. And then, you know, the newer stuff, trying to find information about that. There were a couple books that were helpful. There was, some special effects books. One of them was written by, the founders of, J&M Special Effects. They actually wrote a book back in the 80s. So they had a lot of information. And then there was a great book I found that was on, animatronic displays for holiday windows. And so that was highly technical, but definitely like, I gleaned what I could from that, and distilled it down to what we would actually need to know. And then, you know, I just got a lot of information from like fellow SPAM members and other prop masters. Sean McCardle is kind of a pneumatics whiz. And so I just, every time he helped anybody out with pneumatics, I would take notes. And then every time I had to do a pneumatics trick, I would ask him. And so for this book, I actually had him look at the chapter and go through it and give me any sort of tips and tricks about that. And, you know, talking, when I was talking about like wireless dimmers, the sales rep from RC4 Wireless, Sean Dane, was a big help because I talk with him about that a lot of times. So I could just kind of like throw things back and forth. Lots of like, I wanted to know about, you know, smoke effects and what Actors Equity allows. And so I talked with Zach Murphy, the lighting supervisor at the Public Theater, because he actually does smoke testing for Broadway shows. He's certified to do that for Equity. And so I just asked him about that whole process and like how it works and like what, you know, what are they looking for? How do you get fog effects approved? What are the different types of fog? All that sort of stuff. So really, you know, because there's not a lot of this stuff written in books, I was just finding the people who were experts in this and picking their brains and finding out as much as I could and making sure not to give their secrets away. Just talking about, you know, it's more like, what are the questions you're tired of answering? What do you want everybody to actually know about your line of work that I could put in a book and that people can look up rather than asking you all the time?
Well, what would you say is the most common questions that you get that would relate to this book?
You know, asking how to wire a switch to a battery and a light is actually really, really common. And that, because that's like the, you know, that's the basic thing to do with electricity. And if you don't, if you haven't done anything with electricity, it's very daunting because there's so many sizes of wire. Are different wire types of wire the same or different? You know, there's like, there's black wire and red wire. Does that make a difference? There's positive and negative. It's, I got a battery. I got a plug. How do I, you know, all this sort of stuff. So that's just a really, really common question. And so I tried to make sure that I definitely like definitively covered that in the book. And, you know, a close second to that is LEDs, which is almost the same as wiring a regular lamp, but you got, extra considerations with their voltage and resistance and things like that. But yeah, people always want to know blood recipes and blood tricks. You know, that's always interesting to people. Obviously, any sort of breakaway is always going to be interesting. Different types of fake fire. I just had a question. Somebody was wanting to know if there was like a flow chart for all the different kinds of fake theatrical fire so that anytime that comes up, they could just go through the flow chart. You know, it's like, are you allowed to have real flame? Are you allowed to have smoke? Can you do silk? Can you do a projection? Can you, you know, can it be a lighting effect? That sort of thing. So those are like the really, the basics kind of things. Make a bottle break, make a lantern light up, make somebody bleed, make a fake fire.
Which are all answered in this book.
I hope so. Yeah.
What was your favorite section of this book? What did you really have fun researching, or just your favorite topic to discuss, I guess?
Oh, you know, I think the one on trick mechanisms was like really interesting to write because I was trying to figure out how to categorize the different things and how to sort of, group them together and make it, you know, like a lesson, like what are the fundamental elements of trick mechanisms. So, you know, like something like lighting, that's easy to go through and you're like, these are different bulb sizes and shapes. This is different gauges of wire. This is how you wire it. And then trick mechanisms, you're like, this is something falling. This is something rolling. This, things on wheels, things on top of moving platform, you know, so trying to kind of like make up these categories and be like, this is tricks with strings and how you could do that. And then, cause a lot of it's really basic, even though the ways you implement it is really clever. But like in a book, you can't do a whole chapter where you're like, tie a piece of string to it and then see what happens. You kind of have to like kind of spell it out to them, but not like give like, these are the only definitive ways to do it. Cause you start looking around and you're like, the way people solve all these problems, it's like ways you wouldn't even think about.
Yeah. And I think you do a great job of that because with each chapter, you have multiple examples. You know, it's not just, oh, here's one thing. You know, there's multiple ways of doing it and different ways of accomplishing one thing and just out-of-the-box ideas, which I think is very valuable.
Yeah, I thought it was really important to get a wide variety of actual tricks from actual theaters and a wide range of theaters, too. So not just, like, the highest budget shows at big mainstream theaters, but all the way down to like almost community theaters and like small regionals and that sort of thing. Because you might assume that your trick is like this kind of slapdash thing, but if it works, then it works. It's a good trick. Mm-hmm. And so seeing, a big theater and their trick is just a bunch of string and mouse traps and the instructions are written in Sharpie on the side and it's like really kind of homemade looking really helps out when you're thinking about your own trick. And it's like, I don't need a machined aluminum and a control pad with blinking lights. It's like, it could be this kind of homemade thing as long as it's like easy for the crew to use and consistent and foolproof, you know, they pull a string and a trap door opens and that's it. That's all you need.
Yeah. Especially knowing that the majority of shows out there is very low budget.
Yeah.
You know, you're not catering to only the top schools with the high budgets or the top regional theaters with the high budget. You know, you are making sure that everybody can use these tricks.
Right.
Which I think is, you know, I think that's great because there's so many people who can't afford, you know, the quick and easy, you know, these are little tricks you can just make happen.
Yeah. And they're always going to be a prototype. You're not like, you're not making something and then sending it back to the factory to fine tune it. It's going to be a prototype and it's going to be, you know, slapped together as you go. And that's, you know, once you get it working, that's the final version too. You're not going back to it and making a perfect version of it. It's like it's done.
Now there's one chapter in here that I find very fascinating that you included and I like is your motion chapter on chapter 4, and you have great diagrams in this chapter for, you know, your casters and placement in the casters and where you should put your swivels and where you should put your straight casters and stuff like that. So let's talk a little bit about this chapter because I'd love to, you know, talk more.
Right. Yeah, it's not really thought of as a trick, but, you know, one of the most common things for any show with multiple scenes is putting wheels on furniture, putting casters on furniture, or, you know, putting them on a wagon or somehow like moving things around for a scene change. So you don't think of it as a trick, but it's something that a props person has to know how to do. And again, it was something that didn't fit in my first book, but it's like, well, what book would this go in? Like, you need to at least address, you know, types of casters, caster placement, and then the different kinds of glides and slides, when you would use them, and then all the different methods of braking as well, because you know, we're still a ways from the perfect world where a chair just magically floats in and then instantly stops. And when the actor jumps on it, it doesn't move at all until you're ready for the next scene change. And then it easily moves by a single actor with one hand, not having to bend down, not having to trigger anything. You know, with enough time and money, you could probably do that, but most of us don't have that. So it's like, are you bending over to take the brakes off, or is there some kind of foot thing you can kick, or what are you doing? And so that was a lot of just like describing the methods I've seen over time. Cause again, with theater, there's some existing hardware, but a lot of it is stuff that we're all making, you know, and it's somebody publishes blueprints for an Aircaster and like Theater Crafts magazine in the 70s, and you go around and you see theaters still using these today, you know, the same ones, all like built by some TD when he had extra time and money, and they just keep bringing them out every time they need them. So yeah, casters, like, we on the spam message boards, people still talk about casters, trying to find the quietest casters and the smoothest rolling casters and the smallest casters, and they have to be in black, or they have to be period looking, or, you know, you're never going to have the perfect caster.
No, never, never. It's a dying battle.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody always wants to use those ball casters, like on conveyor belts, and then they get them, and they're made to be upside down and used on conveyor belts. And when you turn them upside down to use as wheels, they make just this horrible scraping metal sound. You're like, oh, well, that didn't work.
Joyful. Is there a specific chapter you would kind of like to talk about for a bit and give a little insight for the listeners?
You know, I've been playing with pneumatics the most in the last, like, couple of years. I actually did a pneumatics workshop at the Props Lab at USITT, but I've really only been using them on stage, like, the last year or so. So I've been learning a lot and, like, building up my little equipment library, because, you know, the same is true with electrics. You kind of have to, like, get all these little tools and, you know, pieces of equipment, you know, build up a stock of wire. It's not like you could go out and buy a starter kit, like the prop electrical starter kit or the prop pneumatic starter kit. There's all these, like, fittings and adapters. And until you've been doing it for a while, it's you feel like you're running out, you know, every day to the hardware store to buy like 10 new things just to make this one trick work. And until you have all this, like, this box of random parts, you can't, like, just whip a trick together. So I've finally gotten to the point where I could kind of do, you know, interesting pneumatic effects. But after the book came out, I had to do a blood cannon, and I did it, and I learned a lot on it. And so I was like, oh, I gotta put this in the book. I gotta put all this in the second edition. I didn't know all this to start with. So it's definitely something I'm still learning, and I hope the chapter like has enough to get people started on. But it's like, there's so many things to know about it, and like none of it's written down yet. It's all, maybe you could find some stuff on some haunted house web pages, because they do a lot of pneumatic effects, but they're kind of doing the same, you know, use a pneumatic cylinder to make a guy jump out of a trash can kind of effect. They're not really doing all the weird stuff. I had to do it was a doll that blows bubbles on her own. So using like a little pneumatic valve so that she could like blow bubbles by herself, and trying to set that and figure that all out was an interesting challenge. It worked for the show. I haven't been able to make her work again since then. So I basically like stripped all the parts out of her to use for other effects.
Amazing.
Cause again, it's like, you know, it's like $50 worth of parts that I could use again for something else, you know, instead of keeping it in storage for, is anybody ever going to need to rent the bubble blowing doll? Really?
And then you get that call after you've
got it. Right, yeah. Does it still work? Like, oh, well.
One more thing before we leave today. There are rumors you are making a new book. You want to tell anything about that?
Yeah. After my first book came out, there's a small subset of people who were hoping there would be like step-by-step instructions for specific props within the book, which the first book was meant to be like this overall guidebook for professional props people and all the materials, tools, and methods that they might use. And so, you know, as most props people know, there's never one way to build a specific prop. And so doing that was kind of counter to what that book was about. But there were a lot of people, that's what they want. They don't want to learn how to be a professional props master. They want like specific instructions on how to build specific props. And also there's a lot of people out there who need to build props who aren't props people. So you got like, you know, the TDs at a high school or, you know, the student prop master at a school where there's no props program and they're just told you have to do the props and they do a show where there's a prop that they have to build and they're like, I don't know how to build this. So I came up with this idea that I sort of preliminarily ran by my publisher and they liked it. Of doing a beginner's prop book. Mm-hmm. So this would be like a collection of, I keep saying 25. So like 25 specific props, step-by-step instructions. And instead of being, you know, I would stay away from sort of professional prop materials. And I would focus on mostly things you could get at hardware stores and craft stores, like local kind of stuff. So none of our specialty plastics, no like vacuforming or no, you know, you gotta have this special machine that only a shop has. It's like, you know, you're a TD at a high school or you're somebody in their garage or you're helping out with your kid's pageant or something like that. What can you buy and what can you build? And so like, these are like basic props, you know, like a crate, a treasure chest, a potion bottle, a fake axe, you know, like these kind of iconic props that everybody needs to make at some point out of all these basic materials. And so the idea would be like, if you go through the whole book and build every prop, then you're exposed to like a whole range of different materials, you know, sewing and carpentry and, you know, sculpting and things like that. Or you could just use it just for the instructions to build like the specific prop. So I'm hoping that it would be the prop book for people for whom the prop building guidebook is too comprehensive, too intense, and too focused on a professional prop shop. This will be more like the hobbyist or the aspiring props person or the occasional props person. And so far, a lot of people seem really interested in it. So
yeah, I think it sounds like a great idea. I'm excited to see it come to life.
Well, as soon as I have some time, I'll try to work on it.
What's that? Well, guys, that's all we got for today. Thank you for listening in and make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache and email us with any ideas or questions at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. And if you want to support us, check us out at patreon.com/silkmache. You can also find that link on our website, www.silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, where you'll also find all of our old episodes.
This has been another episode of Silk Flowers and
Papier-Mâché Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. We'll see you next week.
Bye.